Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Red Sox fans, here are the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome, everyone. The Bastards are back for this midweek edition of the podcast. We are downloaded in over 30 countries across the globe and available on every major media platform. For everyone listening on Apple Podcasts, please rate and review the show if you have not already. Nothing you do will help us more immensely. The Red Sox just wrapped up a two-game set against the Atlanta Braves, sweeping them 2-0. They are still in second place in the American League East, just one game behind the Tampa Bay Rays. Quick disclaimer for any first-time listeners, this is not a homer podcast. We call it how we see it. When the Red Sox are dominating, we will celebrate that. When they are getting destroyed, we will be critical and at times savagely blunt. If you are easily offended, press the stop button immediately. But for those who embrace it, let's get rolling. I am Terry Cushman coming to you from Lewiston, Maine. You can harass me on Twitter at CushmanMLB. You can also find the podcast account at Bastards_Boston. Co-hosting with me tonight from the mile high city of Denver by way of Quincy, Massachusetts, Andrew Dwan. Andrew, how are you?
Always doing good after a sweep. Can't ask for much more.
When was the last one well, the Yankees won. Okay, so it hasn't been too long.
We did, yeah.
I forget. How could I forget that one? But yeah, and your Twitter handle, Andrew?
It's going to be at Andrew Dwan MLB.
Outstanding. Also joining us tonight from the nation's capital by way of Newport, Rhode Island, the man with the hair, Job Goddard.
For those who can't see, I'm rocking like an Emmett Brown straight from Back to the Future hairdo right now. I'm doing great. You know, like Andrew said, it's tough to not be this good after a sweep. I was at Fenway for games during the Blue Jays series. That was tough. But it's good to finish on a good note. So you can find me on Twitter at JobMLB. That's JobMLB. Make the same joke every time. Don't send me job applications.
Outstanding. Your parents just should have put an E on the end of your name and life would be so much easier.
You're preaching to the choir there, Terry. I might have asked that question 100 times.
Fun fact about me, I'm named after my dad, and on my initial birth certificate, I was listed as the second. And I hated it so much that when I was a junior in high school, my parents switched it to junior. So we had to go through the probate courts. So it can be done, Job, is the point I'm getting at. But
at this point, I'm gonna just switch it to Arroyo. You know, there you go. Get that going.
Yeah, one of my favorite players for sure. All right. So us geniuses on the early week show predicted a sweep for the Braves. We saw Tucker Davidson's first few starts as a rookie and thought, we never beat those guys. And then Ian Anderson, arguably a top of the rotation guy. However, we were wrong. All three of us. Sox got the sweep. I want to say this, and we're going to get into it, but pitching, not so great. It was all about the hitting. Red Sox gave up 16 runs in two games, but we scored 20.
So across the league, Terry, just a quick anecdote.
Of course.
Just using Las Vegas over and under data for the last 2 days. As of right now, today's projected to go 10-4 on the over. Yesterday went 10-4 on the over. So the numbers are way, way up for scoring across the league, not just for, you know, the games that we're playing in. And if you remember correctly, in our preseason show, I picked Ian Anderson to be my sleeper pick for the Cy Young. So I'm excited to be wrong about that one tonight.
Yeah, I forgot about that pick. That's a pretty good one. A nice sleeper pick, like you said. All right, so I just want to give everyone a heads up. We're going to be talking a lot of sticky stuff, you know, foreign substances, what we think about it, what the players think about it. That's going to be in the Deep Dives episode 24 hours after this current one is released. So look for that stuff specifically in there. And if you haven't listened to the Hot Take Tuesday episode, that was very entertaining. That came out 24 hours ago. This is a busy week, four straight nights of podcasts. This is number three. So, you know, we're getting into it hot and heavy. Studs and duds for this Atlanta sweep. Andrew, your stud for the series.
Gotta go, Arroyo. It's fresh in our memory. Hit a 467-foot grand slam in the exact moment they needed it, two outs, you know. He wasn't even going to be the guy that was coming up. It was going to be Santana. And then Cora yanked him back, and the rest is history, as they say. This guy is a clutch gene, and the only thing holding it back right now is his health. He seems to just get drilled or have something happen to him every time they want to give him extended playing time. But if this is going to be his role going forward, just, you know, pinch hitting maestro, I'm not super opposed to it.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, how hard of a decision is that? Arroyo or Santana? Santana has five or six hits. So, of course, you know, Arroyo. But, Job, your thoughts?
Well, you know, I put in the chat right as Bobby Dalbec stood up to the plate that if he didn't hit into a double play, I wanted to see Arroyo. Alex Cora was way, way ahead of me because he put in Santana, knowing they were going to go to Minter in the bullpen as a lefty, and then pulled a little switcheroo, introduced Santana. So obviously Santana could not come back into the game at a later time, and then introduced Arroyo, got the matchup favorable that he wanted. And obviously Arroyo delivered. Every time we need a hit, Arroyo delivers. So like Andrew said, I mean, this guy is so much fun to watch. It's like watching 2013 Johnny Gomes, but on steroids. Not to say that he's on actual steroids, but it's just as entertaining as any Red Sox player I could ever imagine in the big moments. And it's not the guy that you imagine it would be, which makes it even better.
Yeah. I don't know how many more times I'm going to pat myself on the back, but I did have Arroyo as my breakout guy. I liked what I saw last year. I thought he provided a little bit of spark in a season that was one of the worst we've ever seen, albeit an abbreviated season. But what I loved tonight about that grand slam was we were down by a run, and he had two strikes against him. It was a 1-2 count. If he strikes out, we're having a different conversation right now. We're having a much different conversation. We're still down by one run if he strikes out, and he crushed that. And Franchi Cordero has the longest home run, I believe, so far this season, 474 feet. Arroyo's home run, only 7 feet shorter than that. So he absolutely destroyed it, and I love to see it. And I love his presence. I don't know what it is. He's got this tough guy presence. He's got some swagger. He's got some confidence. And I like it. He's one of my favorite players as well. So, oh, and also, he's reaching Johnny Gomes level clutch pinch hitting. Gomes must have hit 4 or 5 dingers in 2013 in a clutch situation. So, like to see it. Jobe, who is your stud for the series?
Just really quickly on that note, Terry, that was the fourth longest home run in Major League Baseball this year. Just looking that up real quick while we're sitting here. My stud for the series is another guy who had a home run. He's been my stud a couple of times. Everyone sleeps on this guy. It's Hunter Renfro. He was, I believe, 4 for 7 in the series, unless I'm missing at bat late there, with a home run, 4 RBIs, 2 in each game. He didn't play great defense early tonight, but he made an absolutely great throw to the cutoff man in the 9th, which allowed the relay to take out Acuna at 3rd on a base running mistake, which helped seal the game. You'd hate to see Acuna at 2nd or 3rd base with Freddie Freeman coming up as the tying run and 1 down. So that was really a big shut the door moment. And Hunter Renfro seems to always put his bat on the ball in these situations now. He's a guy who, I remember on this show about 6 weeks ago, he was hitting 230. And he just hit a couple of home runs in a series against the Baltimore Orioles. And Andrew and I and yourself, Terry, we had a conversation about how this was the highest we were going to get from Hunter Renfro. This was the peak where we should enjoy it while we can. And no, we were so wrong. That was like the base of who he was going to be this season. He's up to about 265 last I checked, with a couple of home runs, 8 home runs, and he's driving in everybody in front of him almost every time he gets up. He's moving runners along, doing all the little things. And despite a couple of misplayed balls in right field, his arm makes up for it because he's got an absolute hose from right.
Andrew, thoughts on Renfro?
Yeah, he's really carrying the bottom of our lineup, and there's no arguing against that. Going into this game, since May 1st, he's been hitting 297. That's in 150 plate appearances. And I don't think anyone could ask for that. I would have been happy if he were giving me 250 all year long. A little shaky in the field today. Only one of them really affected them. It looks like a top spin line drive. Adam kind of ate him up a little bit. But other than that, yeah, it was a heck of a hose that he threw. I wasn't sure if they were going to get Acuna at the end because Xander kind of double clutched it there. But yeah, I don't know what would have happened, honestly, had Acuna made it into 3rd or even stayed on 2nd. This game might still be going on and we would be debating if we want to start this pod. So thank God for him. He actually covered a lot of ground too on drives given up by Sawman there. He made a couple nice plays in the corner. I love Renfro. I'm so happy that we have him for this year. And if it continues for two more years after this.
Well, he's made it impossible really for me to, to hate on him at this point. I mean, he's playing well. I don't worry a whole lot when he's hitting 5th or 6th rather, whatever, behind either Bogarts or Devers, depending on nights off, what have you. It'd be interesting. Could he get up to 300? Like, what's the ceiling? Because he's already exceeded what we thought the ceiling would be.
The last time we said he had a ceiling, he just busted right through it and he kept going. I think the ceiling is probably about where he is now, maybe a little bit higher, 270, 275, with some power. But we mentioned it on our last show together, this crew. He's turned himself into a legitimate everyday player, and we brought him in as a platoon guy. So that's another win, a win for Andrew and the Heim Bloom crew, as far as I'm concerned. And the lineup is just that much deeper with Renfro in it.
Yeah, and we talk about alignments a lot on this show and earlier on in the season. Yeah, I thought Renfro was going to be a platoon guy, but now I'm starting to think as players might get called up and whatnot, I'm starting to think Hernandez is more of the platoon guy at this point, and Renfro's the everyday guy. Because once we get an outfielder, I mean, Verdugo's going to play every day. Renfro's going to play every day. That outfielder is probably going to play most days. So that puts Kike probably back at second base some games, maybe filling in the outfield. I don't see how you take bats away from Renfro at this point.
I don't think you do, but I do think it allows you to rest Verdugo as you need to down the stretch, like the dog days of summer, because he's always going to have something kind of nipping at him, whether it be a hamstring or a tight back. So if that can cut down on the wear and tear of him, you can give him 1 to 2 days off a week. That'd be great depth to have there.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. Those are probably the scenarios in which he will be in the outfield. So I'm just, you know, just impressed with Renfro. I don't think he's a platoon player going forward based on what he's showing us. My stud for the series, it was hard. We'll get into the honorable mention on who I thought I was going to pick, but I'm going with Rafi Devers. He got game one started with a 3-run bomb out to right center. And we're up 3 runs with Eduardo Rodriguez on the mound. That's exactly what you want. You want the least amount of pressure on him as possible. And Devers had another RBI single later on in the game. And also drove in another run tonight. He was 4-for-8 on the series. And drew 2 walks in tonight's game because he strikes out an awful lot, but drew 2 walks tonight. So very solid series for Devers, and hope it continues.
Yeah, and he had a great play late in the game. The guy ended up scoring off the Acuna double, but that pick he made going down the line, he didn't make the throw, but I think that also changes the just kind of the atmosphere that's they're playing in that position, because instead of no outs guy on second, it was only no outs guy on first. Who knows what happens there? Really happy to see him more so pick it up defensively than offensively, because offensively it should always be there. Defensively has been where the question marks have been throughout his career. So that's just one more step in development, and I'm glad we're seeing it in real time here from Devers.
Yeah, Devers offensively is an absolute stud. There's no other way to describe it. Every time you need a hit, he comes through, and he's just getting better. This kid is one step from being an MVP candidate, and I'm so excited to watch it. I think Andrew's right. His defensive play in the ninth, even though he didn't get the out, Bobby Dalbec had to bail him out with a big leap there at first. Extremely clutch. And the reason that I mentioned that and that Andrew brings that up is that when it goes down the line there at Truist Park, I believe it's called, in Atlanta, that's a double for sure, but it could even be a triple. The way that ball kicks off the wall, and especially with JD out there and left, you never know what's going to happen. And that changes the complexion of the whole inning, because if there's a guy on third there, you have extreme pressure on the bullpen. We know Ottavino, with guys on base, lets guys steal all over him, struggles a little bit to get the ball over the plate. He's much better in a clean inning. So it really changes the whole outlook of the ninth. So I'm very happy with Rafi Devers in this series. And more so than just the basics, his emergence as kind of a leader by example at the age of 24 bodes so well for this team down the road.
Yeah. And only a couple of Red Sox players have exceeded him in production before the age of 25. So he's doing some special stuff. And if he plays for another 10 years, he's going to Cooperstown. So, love to see it. He's one of my favorite players, and hopefully, hopefully he spends his whole career with Boston. But that's a conversation for another show. Some honorable mentions to get to. Xander Bogaerts was 4 for 9, drove in runs in each game, had 3 doubles tonight in the second game. So really impressive, swinging a good bat there. JD Martinez, 3 for 10. The big reason why I'm putting him in the honorable mentions is he had a stand-up triple. So not the fastest runner on the team, had a stand-up triple.
Not only a stand-up triple, he also hustled around the bases to score when Xander hit a double off the wall and left.
Oh, absolutely. That was from first as well, wasn't it?
Yep.
If I'm not mistaken. Yeah, absolutely. Good observation. Alex Verdugo continues to show some power. He also had a 3-run bomb. That was late last night, which essentially kind of sealed it for us. So nice to see there, 3 for 10, but still, making a big impact. I'll give Bobby Dalbec an honorable mention. He was 3 for 9. He did strike out 3 times in the second game, as he is prone to do, but, drove in a run, didn't look terrible. Would have been nice if he would have drove in some runs, without having to sweat out the Arroyo Grand Slam, but we'll still take it. I can't think of a real honorable mention in the pitching department. We're going to talk about a lot of that in the duds section, but any observations there? Do you want to make any comments on the
Yak Man, the new Yak Man, Rios? I thought he looked good against Swanson, who had previously obliterated a ball down the left field line to give them the lead. Or to tie the game up, I guess it was. And yeah.
Yoxo was great. Great command of the slider. Andrew's absolutely right. And he made a great defensive stab there on that ball that came right back to him. If that hops off the mound into the center field, it's probably a double because it slows down there. I want to give Josh Taylor a round of applause. 2.1 innings pitched in the series. Another couple of scoreless appearances. He's just absolutely become Mr. Reliable. Terry, I hate when you're right about things, but you're right about him. So I'm glad about that. So another back of the bullpen guy that has emerged for the Sox down the stretch.
I've been wrong on a lot of things lately, especially my series predictions. I didn't have him in my notes for game one, but nice to see with Taylor. Is he the second best guy in the bullpen at this point? Like, can we go there?
I think Ottavino is still probably there. All just right. Because he's pitching in the higher leverage situations. But as far as who I want, it depends on the hitter. It really is at the point where I'm not saying in the eighth inning you have to go get Ottavino. Sometimes it's, I want Taylor to come out there and face Freddie Freeman, for example. If Freddie Freeman is up, I'd rather have Taylor than Ottavino.
I'm going to give you guys another month, and then you're going to agree with me that he's the second best.
I hope you're right.
All right. So, So a high offensive output. We scored 20 runs between the two games. Gave up 16, so we'll get into that right now in the dud section. So, Andrew, go ahead. Your dud for the series.
That was tough. It was Workman. I honestly kind of forgot about him. when he came in, I was like, who is that? Oh yeah. But his stuff just isn't there. If that curveball isn't going to have the snap on it that it had in his prime, and who knows if it will, if they're cutting down on, substances, he's not going to be usable because he throws 89 to 90, which I don't know if you heard Eck when Tomlin was in. They're like, you just don't see anyone throw 89 anymore. It's like, dude, Workman just did that for a full inning. But he walked the first guy he faced. You can't do that, especially when you have his stuff. And I think his days are numbered. Good risk that they took on him. There was literally zero downside to it. Only upside. It was a guy you're familiar with. Maybe it worked out. Maybe it didn't. And I wouldn't even say this didn't work out. I just don't think the upside is there. So for that reason, I went with him.
Joe?
Yeah, I agree with Andrew. I think his 40-man roster spot is probably not long. He's not long for this team. There are guys that are going to be ready pretty soon that I think are next man up. I think Brazier is probably a threat to take his spot, as is Tanner Houck when Houck is ready. He's pitching at AAA Worcester again, so that's coming up pretty soon. And even, you know, as we get further into it, there's going to be more guys that have to drop off. Duran could take that spot if you go with position player. I just don't think he's long for this team. He hasn't shown the dominance that he had in previous stints with the Sox. And he just seems like his cutter's not working. And when he can't play off the cutter with his off-speed stuff, he's going to get eaten alive by hitters. It's really just not the overpowering stuff he had in 13. So it's good to have him out there because you know what he is, but it's bad to have him out there because his ceiling is so much lower than we hoped.
Yeah, I kind of hope he figures it out. We know what the ceiling is, and I don't think there's any reason to believe he can't get there again. He's expendable because of his contract situation, so I get that, and he could very well be DFA'd again, you know, in a matter of days. So I, again, hope that doesn't happen, but he hasn't looked sharp. Guys have been getting on base and can't keep allowing that. So, you know, fair enough. I was singing his praises a couple of shows ago. So, but ever since, he hasn't looked good. Job, your dud for the series.
My dud for the series is going to be Eddie Rodriguez. He went 4 innings pitched, gave up 6 hits, 4 earned, 1 walk. He did strike out 8, and he had some really good stuff. He just threw too many pitches. And it brings up a concern for me that maybe he's just not healthy. We saw him pitch pretty well in the end of spring training and then have to get sat down for flexor strain and dead arm. And I wonder if maybe just not pitching last year because of myocarditis and then a shortened offseason really hurt his development as a pitcher, and I question whether he has the endurance to give you 5 or 6 innings at this point in his career. He might need an IL stint, as far as I'm concerned, some rehab performances at AAA. So I'm a little concerned about Erod. It's not necessarily anything against him. He had, like I said, great stuff, 8 Ks. I just worry that he can't. We need him to give you more than 4 innings because we expect him to be better than the Martin Perez's and Nick Pivetta's of the world, and he's not.
Hopefully he figures it out. I mean, we saw how long it took Taylor to come back to the point where he's at. He looked unusable. He didn't even look like a major leaguer. Now he seems to have gotten what he got back, or what he had lost, gotten back. And I'd say that Eddie's situation was probably 10 times worse than Taylor's. I mean, it wasn't just COVID with the myocarditis. I mean, God, that's unprecedented for literally no baseball player has ever faced that. So it's hard to really base what we should see as a milestone in his recovery. We're just taking it one day at a time. I was really hopeful at the start of his outing. He was really displaying his fastball there, getting a lot of swings and misses on it. But then the guys weren't missing at one point, and the wheels kind of came off. Hopefully he can build upon it. I don't know how much they can work with him in between games. If you do get a guy healthy like Houck, you can skip him with, you know, in a spot start here or there. But I think we're just going to have to let this play out, unfortunately. I don't know what else they can do at this point with him.
Yeah, I was wondering maybe if there was a way they could manipulate him into a, you know, an IL stint with maybe a sore arm or whatever the designation is, just to give him some time to rest, recover, skip a couple of starts, and kind of figure a way around it. But I don't know if they can. And honestly, I don't know if Eddie would want that with his impending free agency. You know, this is a guy that Terry wanted to lock up for $30 million a year.
Not 30 a year. That wasn't me.
I just want it out there that he definitely is going to need to improve. But as of right now, he's just not cutting it as a workhorse, and you can't have too many guys like that. I wonder if maybe he's the odd man out when and if Chris Sale returns.
It's certainly looking like that could be the case, and I tweeted out last night, he might only get a one-year contract next year with whatever team signs him if he can't right the ship. But the thing that's so perplexing to me is that he had a very good spring training, and then he had the dead arm, missed a few weeks, came back in April, was dominant right out of the gates. Our most listened to episode, I kid you not, was the one where, and of course I jumped the gun big time, where I questioned whether he would be a Cy Young candidate at the end of the year in the title of the podcast. That's our most listened to podcast of the season so far. And he's just gone completely off the cliff. Now, he was weathering the storm pretty well until the fourth inning when Acuna hit that two-run triple. And that made the score. It was 5-2, and then it was 5-4 after Acuna got to him there. And then, like Andrew said, the wheels just kind of came off. So his pitch count went way up very rapidly, and it's concerning. And maybe he does need a reset. Maybe that's what needs to happen. He just needs to chill out, take a breather, maybe work on a couple of things. His changeup was really good early in the season, and that's not really been, you know, something he's dominated with since then. So we'll talk about Tanner Houck and how he could be utilized. That's going to be in the next show with the sticky substances on Deep Dive. So I guess look for that as, 24 hours from now. But Rodriguez, it's hard to – let me point this out too. I shouldn't be getting into this now. But the one thing that did give me pause is the grip thing. None of them are using anything because they're all paranoid right now. So what would this have been like? He looked very good against the Yankees and okay in his last start.
So you're absolutely right. He did look good against the Yankees on 6-5, June 5th, but that is also 2 days after the Sports Illustrated story broke, and it was pretty clear that substances were going to become a major focus for Major League Baseball. So I'm hard pressed to believe that in that Yankees game, when it's the height of, you know, this is just getting the ball rolling, sure, but the players were already addressed about it, that he was using sticky substances to battle his way through 5.1. We talk about the Yankees like they're the Yankees of 2020 or 2019 as far as offense goes. The Yankees have scored less runs this year than the Arizona Diamondbacks. The Arizona Diamondbacks are on an 18-game road losing streak and are, I don't even have the numbers in front of me, but I'm going to guess 20 games out of the division there in the National League West. That's how bad the Yankees offense has been. So he went 5.1 against the Yankees. He did give up 5 hits, 3 runs. He struck out 7. He looked good. But then last game against Houston, I understand it's Houston. Best lineup there is that we're going to face all season, in my opinion. 4.2, but he gave up 6 hits, 6 runs, 3 walks, 5 Ks. Looked okay, not super sharp. Today he came out firing, or rather yesterday he came out firing. For the first 2 innings, I was like, oh my God, maybe Eddie's back. Maybe this is it. Every first 2 innings of every start that he's had this season, that's how I'm feeling. I just wonder if maybe you move him to the bullpen and you give him 30 pitches, if he can be your long guy in the bullpen and be dominant in that role, because he's really good until he starts to run out of gas.
He's only gotten through 5 full innings in 4 out of his last 5 starts. So it's concerning, but it's just the worst possible timing for, you know, the substance thing, because I feel like there were guys that weren't abusing it like egregiously, and they're the victims here. So we'll get into that in the next episode, but didn't look great yesterday in the fourth inning, especially. My dud for the series, I'm going with Hirokazu Sawamura. I love saying his first name. He had a two-inning outing tonight, and he's been utilized for more than three outs fairly often this year, surprisingly, because I wasn't expecting that coming into the season. But he got through the first inning unscathed, a couple of flyouts, and then a strikeout, and then he comes out for the second inning, gets Acuna out quick enough, and then Freddie Freeman hit a home run. And then Abraham Almonte got a double, and then he walked Austin Riley. And then Cora came out and replaced him with Yoxel Rios, who then got out of the inning cleanly. But it's just the inconsistency. Like, he teases us so often with that splitter and just wipes out the side in some appearances. And then nights like tonight, just scuffles a little bit. He is prone to the long ball, as we saw with Freeman. I mean, Freeman destroys a lot of guys, but I just want him to be that bona fide high leverage guy, and we're just not seeing it so far with consistency. Andrew.
You saw that home run coming a mile away when he shook off the splitter. Unfortunately, it was like, you know, Freddie Freeman's a smart ball player. He sees you shake it off. He knows what's coming after that. It's going to be a fastball. So you're sitting dead right on there and just teed off. I will say for Hiro, though, he has been eating innings when they've needed him the most. So even though he hasn't been super consistent, that has been invaluable for this team, that a guy can come in and throw two innings. I don't think anyone saw him as a two-inning reliever coming into the area. He's no spring chicken. He's definitely getting up there in age. So for him to come over and just kind of accept that role and be there when they need him to, I still feel confident when Cora puts him in.
Yeah, I understand it's tough to choose a dud based off the fact that we had two go-ahead game-tying home runs in seventh inning and then the eighth inning in the last two nights, and pretty much everybody's been good. And Terry, you pick last, so I understand it's tough to pick. But he gave up two hits tonight. One of those is the Freddie Freeman home run. Andrew pointed it out, right? You can't shake off your catcher and throw a second straight fastball up and in to Freddie Freeman. He's last year's National League MVP for a reason. I don't care how hard you throw it. And I understand Sawman throw it 96. 96 is not 105. It's not 104. It's not 102. And I wouldn't even throw Chapman's fastball to Freddie Freeman in that spot. So I didn't like his pick selection, but he did give us an inning last night. He threw 11 pitches, got out of there quick, 8 strikes. And then tonight, he got through the first inning no problem and then got into a little bit of trouble in that second inning. I wonder if maybe he's just a little gassed. I actually put that one more on Cora than I do on Sawamura, just based on usage rate. I probably would have pulled him for that inning. I understand you don't want to use Barnes, but with the off day tomorrow, you probably could have moved everybody forward one, gone to Yaxel Rios. When Rios was done, you could have then gone on to Workman, Hernandez, Taylor, Ottavino, and then Barnes could have closed it at the end. So you use one more arm, but you don't stress Sawamura past his breaking point. So I actually blame Cora more so than I do Sawamura.
Given his age, and I feel weird saying this because Koji Uehara was an absolute beast at 38 years old, closing out a World Series. So you got Sawamura, who's 32, 33. Are we at the point where maybe he just has to be a one-inning guy?
I don't know that we're at that point yet. Because we've seen him be dominant for multiple innings. I just, for many reasons, not the least of which is I wanted to see what Yaxel Rios could do with a clean inning. which Andrew and I were talking about off air, I just feel like you don't want to stretch the guy past his capabilities, because when he does start to try to hump it up there at 95, 96, he does tend to leave it up in the zone a little bit, and big league hitters can hit that out of the ballpark at a lot more frequency than Japanese hitters. That's just the difference.
And Rios had the unfortunate spot there where the pitcher's spot in the lineup was coming up right after he got out of that jam. So that sucked. He only had thrown seven or eight pitches. So I think we probably would have seen him again had his spot in the lineup not been right where it was. Stupid NL.
Yeah, I thought it would have been fun to see him in a clean inning as well. But yeah, I was just mentioning that with Sal Moore, especially because he did pitch, like you said, Job, to three batters the night before. So to go back to back games and then the second game being, for extra outs, I don't know. I just wonder if he's going to be a liability, in that type of situation going forward. But
you know, I think it's possible, but when you look at the lineup that he faced, that second time through the order, or that second inning, rather, he's facing Acuna, Freddie Freeman, I believe, was it Ozzie Albies? He faced somebody, or Inciarte, maybe, as that first hitter. And those are big league hitters. I mean, you're talking about the National League MVP from last season, the leading votes getter in All-Star ballots this season, and probably a favorite to win multiple MVP awards down the road in Acuna Jr., and you've already used a lot of bullets. I think that's probably why you don't go to Yaxel Rios in that situation. If you're Cora, you don't want to put too much stress on the new guy who you haven't really seen, unless you have to. And that's probably the reason for the decision. But to me, I trust Sawman to go multiple innings. I just think he gets into trouble when he thinks I can beat this guy with my fastball. That might work in Japan. Guys don't hit 40 home runs in Japan on an annual basis. It's a very different game in the Japanese leagues than it is here. If you leave an upwards fastball at 96 in Japan, the guy's probably going to slap it for a double if it's over the middle. Freddie Freeman's going to take you 440. It's just a different sport. And that's nothing wrong with Sawmyr Moro. I think he just needs to trust his catcher a little bit more. Maybe that's something he can work on.
Yeah, I mean, he faced Acuna, Freeman, and Albies, the first three batters in the sixth. So that's early for Sal Moore to be in there. Obviously, the starter didn't go very long for him to be pitching a second inning in the sixth. So we'll just kind of see how they utilize him going forward. Not a lot to get to. I mean, the pitching wasn't great. We're going to dive into a lot of this in the second show, but Richards only four innings, gave up six runs, only four of which was earned, but he was pretty wild, you know, with one walk, two hit by pitches, only struck out three. So kind of labored, didn't throw his curveball at all. So definitely a wonky night for him. Garrett Whitlock also didn't look great in relief. He also went multiple innings in the second of the two. Didn't work out so well. Gave up a run, three hits. So any thoughts on any of them?
I'm not counting any pitching performances for the next like 2 weeks. This is going to be a mess. And Richard's post-game quotes that have started to come out tonight are, he was super candid. He didn't pull a Garrett Cole. He laid it all out on the line. And actually, I think it's awesome to hear from him.
Yeah, we can get into that right now if you want. It'll kind of be a teaser for the next show. Do you want to read them, or you want me to do it?
Whichever one of you reads them, I also thought it was brilliant. I thought it was super awesome to be out in front. Chris Cotillo tweeted them out for anybody who's looking for them in their entirety. But the snippet that really kind of that Andrew sent us that stuck out to me, Terry, was Richard says he can't remember a game where he had to grip a ball harder than he did tonight. Agrees with Glasnow's assessment on injury risk. There's lots of adjustments to be made. That's the tweet from Chris Cotillo, obviously of MassLive.com. Lots of adjustments to be made worries me immensely. I think the big reckoning for us is going to have to be, how do we judge pitching going forward? Right? What's a good ERA versus a bad ERA? What's a good performance versus an okay performance? Because those standards are about to change a lot over the next fortnight. So I think Andrew's absolutely right. You can't really say anything about the pitching on a super big, wide angle view for right now. But I love what I'm seeing from this bullpen, despite being heavily taxed over the last 17 days. Andrew, I think it was you that sent me that 17 games, 17 days. We actually gained ground on the Yankees, gained ground on Toronto, and we're exactly the same position we were with Tampa 17 games ago. So that's great. You know, this team is – they just went 10-7 over their last 17. No rest, and the bullpen is doing great. I'm quite happy where we are right now.
Garrett Richards also said, I can't think of a worse time, to be honest with you, and that's – he's talking about the implementation of the new rules. And then he says – I'm just grateful I got this far in my career before they decided to do this. So it's a mess, and we're going to get into it in the next show. So I keep saying the next show. So we'll save it for there. Another funny note, I was just going through Cotillo's tweets. Where is it? Right here. Christian Vasquez left the game very abruptly. And the number one theory right away, if you look at the tweet threads, was he had to poop. And Alex Cora says after the game to the media, he goes, Christian is okay. He feels a lot lighter than he did earlier. He's going to kill me for this one. So that confirms everything. I don't think he got as far as Chapman did by not making it, as we saw last year. But, yeah, so anyway, so let's get into the Kansas City Royals series here real quick before we wrap. They could definitely be a pesky team for us, so I'm not taking anything for granted in this upcoming series. We also won't be seeing Andrew Benintendi. So first matchup, I'm actually showing a TBD for Kansas City. Nick Pivetta will go for the Red Sox. Martin Perez will hopefully last more than two innings in game two against Chris Bubik. I'm not familiar with him. And then game three will be Nathan Eovaldi versus Brad Keller. And Keller's having a terrible year. So I guess with game one, what do we expect from Pivetta? Tough to now know with the – yeah.
Hard to tell. Yeah. I expect – six innings out of him. I don't know if it's going to be three or four runs. Hopefully it's nothing too crazy, but I think for the next week, it's going to be counting on the offense, and we're going to see a lot of long games time-wise. We're going to be looking at like Yankee Red Sox games, you know, peak early 2000s, count on 4 hours.
Yeah, I was at Pivetta's last start in Boston when he gave up a bunch of home runs to the Jays. I was kind of pissed off, actually. He had great seats, and he just decided that wasn't going to be his night. We're catching Kansas City at the absolute right time. They're 1-9 in their last 10. Benintendi's just gone on the DL. He's been their most consistent hitter, or the IL, I'm sorry. I'm pulling a Terry there. To me, Pivetta should give up probably two runs over five innings. I don't think they'll push him super long because the bullpen has a day off tomorrow, and we'll have some fresh arms. I don't want to see Garrett Whitlock in tomorrow or in Saturday's game one. That's the only thing that would upset me with game one is if they have to go to Garrett Whitlock.
Might need him for game two with Perez if he doesn't go very far. So
that was my thinking.
Yes. Yep. Good thinking, Job. So Bubik, am I saying that right? Is it Bubik? I have no idea.
No, Bubik.
Bubik. Like, okay.
Bubonic. Yep.
I've never heard that word either, Job. So I guess the big victory here would be Martin Perez going five innings, whether we win the game or not.
Well, it's just nice that we're getting to face a lefty starter, because we've seen what we've been doing against lefty relievers, and we're not facing a ton. We haven't faced a ton of them, but when we do, we've been teeing off. So hopefully the bats come up to, what we expect, because Marwin can hit lefties when they gets to flip around to the right side. Renfro, we know, can hit lefties. We know JD will murder a lefty, and even Dalbec can get in on the fun. So Bubik has a 1.3 whip and 1.43 whip and a ERA north of 4. I'm expecting the offense again to put up at least 7.
Yeah, Bubik has not been great in his last couple of games. He gives up a lot of hits, 8 to Minnesota, 6 to the Angels, 7 to Oakland. Not a lot of runs score against him, but he does give up a lot of walks as well. He averages 3 walks a game. This is like a prime has Bobby Dalbec arrived post-game reaction from Red Sox Twitter. Bobby Dalbec and the Red Sox are going to tee off against Bubik. I'd expect this game to be probably in the 8-5 or 9-6 variety. What I want to see from Martin Perez is I want to see some balls. Even if he doesn't have it and he can't grip the baseball and he doesn't have his great stuff, I don't want to see what I've seen the last couple of starts, which is he goes an inning and a third and he looks into the dugout for Cora saying, please come get me. I don't want to see that. I want to see 4 innings at least from him, even if he has to throw 100 pitches to do it, I don't care, of 4-run baseball at most. Not asking a lot from him. And then go to Whitlock for 3 and piece it together from there.
Yeah, Perez had some starts earlier in the year where he got into early jams, grinded his way out of them to still pitch at least 5 innings. So hopefully we see that grittiness. Bubik also gave up 7 home runs last week and 8 2/3 between the Angels and A's starts that he made. So like Andrew said, it could be a home run fest with some of our guys. Game 3, I think we all feel great about that one. Evaldi seems to be pretty undaunted by the new rules that are being implemented. Looked pretty good in his last start. He'll face Brad Keller, who has a 6.14 ERA. And apparently he got roughed up against the Tigers in his last outing. So should be if there's an almost certain win, that looks like the game. Not that we won't win prior to that, but
yeah, I'm gonna sound like a broken record here, but it's gonna be on the offense yet again. This is the get right weekend. Not that they've been scuffling, but a get right weekend for the offense here. And who knows what they do in this game, lineup wise, with another day off after that, because I could see Cora, if they've taken 2 so far, resting maybe 3 starters, probably the left side of the infield there. But even if they do, this is a game that if Evaldi is even just average, they should win.
Yeah, I'm also expecting to win this game. I think it's likely that we don't see Alex Verdugo in game 2. He's been a little bit banged up, as Andrew mentioned in the last show. And against a lefty, I think it's probably the ideal place to whip out all your right-handed bats. So you probably don't see Verdugo. in game two. You might even take the opportunity to give him three straight days off and not play him in this game. I hope not, because I don't want him coming in cold in Tampa. What I want to see in this game is Eovaldi to give you as much as he absolutely can. He's not going to pitch against the Rays, which is a big piece. But also, we have Kansas City again in 6 days. 5 days after this series, we have them again. He will face them again if all things, you know, stay the same. That means our bullpen will also face them again. And what I'm hoping for is him to get through the order at least three times, hopefully go seven innings, so they don't get multiple looks at all the arms in the bullpen. If we can avoid that, use them for the next leg and kind of change up the looks that they get. And then also make sure that we have all of our big arms ready for Tampa Bay.
Yeah, and this isn't the same Royals team that started off on fire, led the American League Central for, I think, most of the month of April before finally going into the cooler. So, like you guys say, we are catching them at the right time. This could be maybe the series where the Red Sox retake the lead in the American League East. So we'll see. I'm not going to make a prediction because I'm a jinx, apparently. So I might take off the month of June, the rest of it, as far as predictions go. Because like E-Rod, I need to reset and I need to get myself right. So do you guys want to put a number on it before we wrap?
I think I had a sweep.
Sweep. All right. That's a lot of faith in Perez. That's a lot of faith.
I also have a sweep. So we're going for a full sweep.
Okay. All right. If it goes sideways, though, plenty of room on my couch. So we'll wrap on that. Look for the Deep Dives episode 24 hours after this one. And then after that, it'll be Charlie, Jason, and myself on Sunday to talk about what did happen in this Royal Series. Take care, everyone.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as 1 day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. LeafHome.com/water